And this is a lecture on viewpoint straight wire, a process which is very simple, very easy to use, and has continuous advances. This process is not mixed with other processes. It's not part of any standard operating procedure. It's not part of anything that you would do ordinarily. Doesn't particularly apply to one case level or another case level. It is an independent process, which in itself is very simple to administer. It can be, I suppose, self-audited, but I wouldn't advise it offhand. The formula of this process is all those definitions and axioms, arrangements, and scales of Scientology should be used in such a way as to bring about a greater tolerance of such viewpoints on the part of the preclear. That's a formula. That means that any scale there is, any arrangement of fundamentals in thinkingness, beingness, could be so given in a straight wire that it would bring about a higher state of tolerance on the part of the preclear. Make this more intelligible. You should understand what a great many preclears are doing and why an auditor occasionally has trouble with one preclear more than another preclear. A great many preclears are being processed solely and entirely because they are unable to bring themselves to tolerate an enormous number of viewpoints. And being unable to tolerate these viewpoints, they desire processing so that they can fall away from them and not have to observe them. And the auditor is auditing somebody who is in full retreat, and Scientology is being used to aid and abet the retreat. By taking the charge off of an engram, the auditor at once gives the preclear something in the way of a change of viewpoint, in that he erases something so the preclear doesn't have to view it anymore. Well, as you can see, this is a weak direction. He erases something so the preclear doesn't have to view it. In other words, what the auditor is doing is, to some degree, holding in question the ability of the preclear to tolerate viewpoints. Time itself may very well be caused by an intolerance of past viewpoints. A person doesn't want viewpoints in the past, and so at a uniform rate, he abandons past viewpoints. And when he no longer is following this uniform rate, but is abandoning them faster than the uniform rate, he starts to jam in terms of time and becomes obsessed about time, becomes very hectic, begins to rush time, push hard against the events and of the day, feels that he doesn't have enough time to accomplish everything he's supposed to accomplish, and this falls off on a very rapid curve to a point where an individual will simply sit around idle, fully cognizant of the fact that he doesn't have enough time to do anything, and so doesn't do anything, but knows he should be doing something, but can't do anything because he doesn't have enough time. This is idiocy itself, but is the state in which you find a great many preclears. Time is a single arbitrary which entered into life, is well worth investigating on the part of an auditor. Now, an unwillingness to tolerate viewpoints will cause a jam in time. The fewer viewpoints which an individual will tolerate, the greater his occlusion and the worse his general state of beingness is. As I said, an auditor can remedy this in various ways. He can erase locks and engrams, and by erasing them, make it possible for the individual to tolerate the view he finds in his own bank. Or an individual can be so processed as in exteriorization, that he can be caused to go around and look at various things and find they're not so bad. Now, let's just take the mean between these two and realize that a person who doesn't exteriorize is a person who does not want an exteriorized viewpoint. He does not feel he can tolerate an exteriorized viewpoint. He may have many reasons for this, but one of the main reasons he will give, of course, is that somebody may steal his body and so forth. In other words, here you have a tremendously valuable viewpoint which he's liable to lose if he exteriorizes. But viewpoints then must be scarce. Viewpoints are obviously too valuable to be used, and this comes about by viewpoints becoming intolerable. Let's take somebody standing, watching his family being butchered by soldiers or something of the sort, Indians or other wild people, and he would go along afterwards so intolerant of this viewpoint that he would fixate on it. It's the fact that he refuses to tolerate the viewpoint which makes him fixate on it. Now, the reason for this lies in the various agree-disagree scales in the doctorate lectures. The fact that if you want anything in this universe, you can't have it. If you don't want it, you're going to get it. This is an inversion, and when this inversion comes about, an individual finds himself overwhelmed each time on whatever his own determinism is. If he starts to desire something, he will find out immediately that he can't have it. Actually, he himself will take steps to make sure that he can't have it. The point is that you have an inversion. When he wants something to flow in, it flows out. When he wants something to flow out, it flows in. Now, there's nothing more pathetic than watching a psychotic try to give up any material object. I've processed a psychotic just on this basis, trying to make them give me or give up or throw away one possession, such as an old Kleenex or almost anything. Let's try to make them give it up. No, they just won't do it. Material object is there. They clutch it to them. And I swear that if you handed them an adder, wide-mouthed and fully fanged, they would clutch it to their bosom. Anything that comes in, they immediately seize. And that's that. Now, you as an auditor trying to make somebody give up something, in essence, you give up a compulsive viewpoint. Well, every time you ask them to give up something, they're liable to hold it closer. Now, there are many processes. There are a great many processes. There's all the standard operating procedures, and oddly enough, in good hands, they all work. There's universe processing. There's advanced course procedure. There's creative processing. On and on and on and on. The tremendous, tremendous amount of technique which can be applied with good sense to preclear. There's enormous numbers of straight wire. There's old-time straight wire, the most basic straight wire there is, which, by the way, is better than Freudian analysis. It's a marked advance on Freudian analysis, the first straight wire we ever had, which we noticed that the preclear is afraid of cats. So we say, all right, now let's recall a time when you were afraid of cats. Now let's recall somebody who was afraid of cats. Now let's find a time when somebody said you were like this person. That was, to some degree, its formula. Just straight wire. And you sprung apart these valences very gently. However, it required a great deal of good sense on the part of an auditor. An auditor now and then would become a straight wire expert. And by just asking such searching questions and causing the individual to recall certain things, he would bring about a great deal of relief on the case. Why did the relief take place? The individual has been going along in the full belief that he could not tolerate a certain viewpoint, and the auditor has come along and demonstrated to him that the viewpoint was in the past and therefore is tolerable. There's, in essence, the fundamentals of such straight wire. You get key outs on this type of straight wire. Well, there's that process, which is get the individual in present time so he isn't looking at the past. That's a goal of a great many processes. Another one is wipe out the past so he won't have to look at it or experience it. We have in viewpoint straight wire a very, very new type of thinking in this. This is a new type of thinking. is not to be confused with what we have been doing for the low these many years. It hasn't any connection with it. You should think of this as something entirely different because it has an entirely different goal than any process you've ever done on preclear. It takes the benefit of exteriorization and reduces it to straight wire. We get an individual to race around the universe and look at things, observe things, experience things. That's a grand tour and that sort of drill, and reduces it right down to straight wire, which is done interiorized or exteriorized. One simply goes on the basis that the preclear is in the state he is in because he is not tolerating many viewpoints. And the entire goal of the process is to bring him to a point where he will tolerate viewpoints. That's all there is to the process. The key wording of the process is, you wouldn't mind. All right, let's give an example of this. Why do I announce this as something important, something new, something that is very useful to you, and so forth? That's because, as I told you a few days ago in a lecture, there are many varieties of viewpoint. If we were to take knowingness and squash it, we would find we were first getting into space, which would be perception. We have to perceive to know. Now, if we condense that, we find out that we have to get emote to know. A person has to emote. We squash perception, and we get into emotion to know. Now, if we squash down and condense even further emotion, we get effort. And if we condense effort even further, we get thinkingness. And if we condense and package thinkingness, we get symbols. As an example of this, what is a word but a package of thought? And if we were to condense symbols, we would get actually the wider definition of the symbol, we would get animals. It's very strange when you think about it. You're probably thinking about it in terms of a viewpoint of a body, if you don't see that clearly. But the definition of a symbol is a mass with meaning which is mobile. And that is a symbol. And of course, that is an animal, too. An animal has certain form, which gives him certain meaning, and he is mobile. And if you see that thinkingness condenses then into form, you will understand art. Just in so many words, a very simple thing. You have thinkingness condensing into symbols. In other words, ideas are condensing into actually solid objects. And when these are mobile, we have these symbols. And when these symbols are observed, they are found to line themselves up with other symbols and take and associate with one another and take things from one another. And you get eating. That's a big band we're covering in there. That's the whole business from I have an idea about a form in this space and matter, and I'm going to get it all together, and I'm going to make this mass together. Well, the second we've done that, something has been created. Now, don't expect that thing which has been created to create anything, because it won't. So, it is a thing which isn't creating, and therefore must subsist on an interchange of energy. And we get eating. Now, we take eating and condense it down. That is to say, let's make food scarce, and let's make it very hard to get. And we got a condensation, you might say, which is completely escapes time itself. And you go outside of time and get sex. That is to say, the outside of present time, and you get future time, which is sex. An individual goes right straight off the time track between eating and sex. And there's nothing will float on a time track like a sexual engram. They just float all over the time track. They don't nail down at all. They're very mobile, believe me. And the individual, in eating, starts to slide out of present time. By this token alone, most people are terribly worried. How are they going to eat tomorrow? And when they reduce this down to the reductio ad gastronomy, you get to a point where I can't solve the problem of eating tomorrow, so therefore I'd better just leave it all up to somebody else and slide in on the genetic protoplasm line and go up the line a little bit and get a form and be another form. That's the best way to solve eating, is just to live tomorrow. And maybe tomorrow there will be more food. This is, by the way, such a thoroughly easy thing to perceive that a simple test will demonstrate this. Now let's take a look at those countries of the world which breed faster and harder than other countries of the world. And we find India and China. And we find that these two countries have the greatest food scarcity. Now we could say, well, look, they have the greatest food scarcity because they keep breeding people and that eats up all their food. No, it's the other way too. They eat up all their food and so they breed like mad. And this can be tested with an animal. If you starve an animal will procreate faster. If you were, for instance, to give any family of Homo sapiens a carbohydrate diet with a very, very low protein diet, by the way, this would be, you'd say, terribly unconducive to the production of, estrogen, androgen. It's true, it would be very unproductive to it, but if you give them a high carbohydrate, very low protein diet, the next thing you know, they'll start to get very anxious about breeding. You're telling them, in essence, right where they can understand it in their stomachs, that they are unable to obtain enough food today and so must eat tomorrow. Therefore, you get countries of the Western Hemisphere, which are very heavily starch dieted. And you find out that these countries are the most anxious about breeding and about tomorrow. Well, no reason to stand around and prove this for hours. It's just a no-to-sex scale. You get condensed knowingness. I don't know how I'm going to get along today, so therefore I better breed like mad and appear tomorrow. Maybe I'll know then. It's about the last ditch. Well, if you notice this, death must come in this band above sex. A person presupposes his own death to indulge in the protoplasm line. See that? And so we get people like Schopenhauer and the will and the idea and so forth, closely associating sex and death. And we get certain animals and insects and so on, which so closely associate sex and death that they accomplish death when they accomplish sex. People always, particularly fear merchants come along, they always like to tell you about the black widow spider. I don't know why the black widow spider is such an attractive beast to some people, but it's apparently so. I noticed that it exists mainly in California, Southern California. Lots of black widows down there. And most California girls, if you get into any kind of a discussion on the second dynamic at all, will sooner or later inform you that the female black widow spider eats its mate after consummation of the sexual act. I don't know why this is, but, probably Californians. Anyway, the main thing is here is actually, when you go down this scale, although it doesn't belong on the scale, you find death just before sex. In other words, it goes no, look, emote, effort, think, symbol, eat, death, sex. See, only death doesn't belong there. But it just shows you where this mechanism comes in. Now, beingness might also be on this scale somewhere. Beingness might be on this scale. And if it were, you would have a tendency to look for it up toward the top. But the truth of the matter is, it's all up and down the scale. And there is no beingness like that beingness at symbols. You find most of the human race having been made into a form, that is, a mass which is mobile, has meaning, a mass with meaning which is mobile, that's a body. That's a word in a dictionary. That's a flag flying above a building. It can be moved around and so forth. You find out that they indulge very, very heavily in being symbols. Well, you'll find people around being sexual objects, too. So that this scale sort of interlocks on beingness. A fellow could be some effort. And actually, we don't find beingness up the top of the scale at all. We find it down there pretty low on the scale. So when an individual's gotten to a point where he has to be something, he's practically out the bottom. Now, that controverts some slight degree, something I said many, many weeks ago on this, But if you remember many weeks ago, I said beingness didn't belong on this scale. Beingness is an activity or a condition, and you might as well throw it onto the scale, so I just threw it onto the scale and didn't discuss it further. Further discussion, examination, would have to put beingness at least at symbols. A person becomes things at that level. So if you find a preclear, madly being his name, where is he? All right, now let's look this thing over even further and find out that there's, I told you the other day, some different kinds of viewpoints. There's something you might call a no point, K-N-O-W point. That would be senior to a viewpoint, wouldn't it? An individual wouldn't have any dependency on space or mass or anything else. He'd simply know where he was. Now, there'd be a viewpoint, which is a perception point, which would consist of look and smell and talk and hear and all sorts of things could be thrown in under this category of viewpoint, but ordinarily we simply mean at that level of the scale, looking. But you can throw all the rest of the perceptions in at that level of the scale. Now, we go down a little bit and we would get something called an emotion point. It would be that point from which a person emotes, and at which he is emoted. And then there'd be something else called an effort point. And the effort point would be that area from which a person exerted effort and that area into which a person received effort. And we'd go down a little bit more than that, and we'd find we had a thinking point. And there, of course, we could figure the person is thinking there, not looking. And we go down a little bit further than this, and we get into, from a thinking point, we just get a symbol point. And there, really, properly, we get words. And below that, we get an eating point. And below that, we get a sex point. If you considered each one of these, below no, as an effort to make space, a great deal of human behavior would make sense to you. Let's take an individual trying to make space with words. He's simply trying to make space with words. Words don't make good space. And so an individual tries to make space with words, sooner or later gets in bad condition. Now, let's look at another one, much lower than that, and a person who's trying to make space with eating. Of course, that's inverted, isn't it? And then there's the person who is trying to make space with sex. And boy, that's really inverted. That goes both ways from the middle. Of course, part of the eating scale, the lowest part of the eating scale, is excretia. Urine. And people will try to make space with that. Dogs are always trying to make space, for instance, that way. Now, then there are people who try to make space with effort. This is the use of force. This is Genghis Khan riding out and slaughtering a bunch of people. He's trying to make space. You notice the space had to exist before he could ride out any place. And we go up a little higher, and maybe you've known somebody who tried to make space with emotion. And we go up a little higher and get the way you do make space, which is by looking. Actually, you make space by knowing. If you just knew there was some space, there'd be some space. That'd be about all there was to that. So simple. Now, that's an effective way to go about it, and looking is another effective way to go about it. And when we get down to emotion, boy, that's getting real ineffective. People who try to make space with emotion don't get very far. That's literally, actually, figuratively, any other way you want to look at it, they just don't get very far. You can't make much space with emotion. It's too condensed, and it kicks back, and so forth. And then there's the individual who makes space by working hard, or by pushing hard, or by exerting force. In other words, there's quite a little bit of band there, you see, to the effort band. And you'll find out they don't get very far either. But they get less far than people who try to make space with emotion. And now we get into the thinking band and people who try to make space with thinking. Boy, that is about the awfulest activity anybody could engage in, is try to make space with thinking. And, of course, we get down to making space with symbols. This is a nation trying to fly its flag all over the world and so forth. And doesn't make much space. Then we, of course, go into eating and an individual by offering things to be eaten, such as a cattleman. You know, he offers things to be eaten. He's making space with cattle. And a fat man, of course, is trying to make space with food, so on. Now, when we get down into sex, of course, if an individual could breed fast enough and far enough and that sort of thing, why, he'd wind up with all kinds of space, he thinks. Of course, he winds up with no space. This is the most condensed activity you can get into, sex. You want to see somebody's bank all short-circuited and jammed, it's certainly short-circuited and jammed on sex. But remember, we're looking at a gradient scale that runs from sex right straight on up through to no. And anybody comes along and tells you sex is the only aberration there is, laugh at him. Say, yes, that was how we entered the problem. We found out that people were loopy on the subject of sex. So then we examined the problem, and having examined the problem for many, many years, discovered that sex was part of a gradient scale of human experience, which is an activity of trying to make space, and people try to make space in various ways. And when they get down too low, why, on the sexual scale, they're abandoning life when they get into sex. They're abandoning present time life and trying to get some future going on the track, and that throws them all around the place, because sex is really a cave-in. It's the effort to have an experience externally. You know, pull an experience in. Well, if you look at this band up and down, you'll see that inverts here or there. So, it gives you the doggonest, most enormous number of straight wire questions when codified correctly that you'd ever want to ask anybody. The basic questions would reduce this thing first from just the standpoint of viewpoint of the whole scale. And there's where you'll catch your pre-clear most ably. You just take viewpoint of the scale, viewpoint of sex, you see, and viewpoint of effort and so forth. And you would ask a question like this. You'd say, all right, let's give me some effort you wouldn't mind observing. Type of effort you wouldn't mind observing. Type of sex you wouldn't mind observing. Sexual activity you wouldn't mind looking at. And so on and so on and so on and so on. You know, some eating you wouldn't mind watching. Some emotion you wouldn't mind observing. Just as quiet and mild as that. Now, the systematic questions as you go into the line would run like this. Now, give me something you wouldn't mind knowing, something you wouldn't mind looking at, an emotion which you wouldn't mind observing, some effort which you wouldn't mind observing. Now, some thinking which you wouldn't mind observing, and now some symbols which you wouldn't mind seeing, and some eating, which you wouldn't mind inspecting, and some sex you wouldn't mind looking at.